Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode discusses violence, murder, graphic drug use, suicide, and autopsy. Listener discretion is advised. This is The Fall Line. Last episode, we introduced you to Tanya Garcia. She's the sister of Tyra Garcia, who disappeared on Memorial Day evening, 1985. Her body was found in an orchard in her own Ventura, California neighborhood a week later, wrapped in a blanket and secured with a cord. From the very beginning, Tyra's family felt her disappearance was treated with a lack of concern. She was just 15. But they worried that law enforcement viewed her as a runaway, not an endangered missing person. Even after her body was discovered, there were confusing aspects to her case that made it difficult for her family to pursue what they viewed as justice for Tyra. First, there was the suggestion that Tyra died by suicide. That was underlined by a mistake on her death certificate, which, per her sister Tanya, took days to correct. Though her autopsy listed her manner of death as homicide, the cause was undetermined, and questions lingered regarding Tyra's activities on the night she disappeared. It was clear to her family that someone, or several someones, knew what happened to Tyra. They'd have to, for her body to be wrapped in a blanket and left in a ditch, hidden away. But how authorities interpreted that information and how leads were pursued became a point of frustration that has continued for more than 30 years. When Maria and Tanya met and began the work that would become the first season of the No Activity podcast, it was one of the first things they tried to sort out, the misinformation that had circulated about Tyra and her case and what the truth might really be. When we spoke, Tanya summed up the biggest issues in Tyra's case, which began as soon as she disappeared. Tanya believes those are the factors that still cause issue in her sister's case today, so they're worth reviewing before we look at what Maria and Tanya worked on in their research into Tyra's case.
The things that they got wrong, the first thing was they had put that she had committed suicide on the death certificate when the autopsy report, which is 2 pages, and the ME report was 3 pages, clearly says that she was murdered. It's a homicide. And we tried to correct that first, and we had to get an outside person to come and fix that for us because they wouldn't listen. They just didn't want to listen. At that time, the medical examiner was going to retire, but the investigators put out in a newspaper that she was a runaway. And she wasn't a runaway. And because they put that out there, I feel that they just didn't want to go forward with the case and to really investigate it fully. And another thing they put out there that she had a drug overdose. They never did any swabbings. They never did any blood work. They didn't take hair or skin samples. They have nothing. They didn't do any trace evidence work on her body. And I feel that because those things are in the report, it puts a big hamper on the case.
If you'll recall from our last episode, Tanya and her family knew of one experience Tyra had with IV drugs, and it landed her in the hospital. She'd been injected by someone else because Tyra had a serious fear of needles. After that reaction, and you can hear much more about this in the No Activity podcast, Tyra entered treatment, which her family supported. Her family has no idea whether Tyra used drugs or alcohol on the night she disappeared, because there was no toxicology included in the files they received. To their knowledge, none was performed at all. If you'll recall from the last episode, Tanya and Maria were told that there are no other papers regarding testing. They have everything that the coroner does. Further, it was explained to them that in 1986, a tox screen would not have necessarily been the norm for that office. So, why note drug overdose as a possible or probable cause? Tanya and Maria feel that the past drug-related event, which was discussed with investigators by Tyra's friends and others who'd heard of it, may have created a presumption in the investigation. Ultimately, Tanya's family doesn't know what happened to Tyra that night. They've heard stories that someone hurt her. They've heard the investigators' theories, which, as they discuss on the podcast, are that Tyra may have purposely or accidentally OD'd, or even been OD'd by someone else. All those scenarios end in one place, with people who are aware of what happened making the decision to hide her body instead of alerting authorities. One of the things that frustrates Tanya the most is the lack of evidence from 1985, because there is so much more to know. That's what she and Maria have been working on.
Can you walk us through, and I know timelines are a little hard here, but, you know, in sort of a step-by-step way, some of what you found out and how you uncovered it?
Well, I had opened up an account on Facebook and did a memorial page for her. And I saw that on another story that another family did this, and it led to some leads in the case. So I was hoping for the same result. And it really brought a lot of Tyra's friends out of the woodwork, because there's people I haven't even talked to for 20, 30 years, and got people talking again about Tyra and, you know, the person she was and about the case. And from there, I had opened up a Facebook page for her, a regular one, because that one got too complicated for me to even navigate anymore. So I switched everything over, and it's been bringing people out. Like, I will post stuff about Tyra and people will just post on there, you know, their memories or recollections about what was going on at that time. And they get to read the actual newspaper articles that are on there, see her pictures from birth until she was 15. Her funeral is on there, parts of the funeral pictures.
In my experience, the situation that keeps unfolding is that as we dig, more questions come up than answers. So, and I'm sure that's pretty typical. But for example, as we were looking at this timeline of her last known night alive, what is it, Memorial Day? Mm-hmm. You know, we know that she was seen at this place with this person and then seen at this place alone. So we knew that. But then, speaking to friends, we also discovered that actually, maybe 10 minutes earlier, she was with a couple other people. And then actually later in that night, she got seen at a party. You know, so it just opens up answers that lead to more questions. It's like, okay, if she was at this party, who was also at this party? Were the two guys she was seen with last with her at this party? Did this party occur before or after she was seen at 7-Eleven? Like, the more we ask, the more there is to ask. That's the tough part, because we are getting answers and we are getting things that we can deliver to the detectives, and maybe they can go through it. And maybe they already know this stuff, but because communication is slim, obviously we don't know what they know. So maybe we're giving them information they already have and asking questions they already asked. Every answer that we do get, it's a step closer and closer to understanding what happened that night and understanding what happened to Tyra. But it opens a floodgate of more, well, what if this might have happened? Or what if this might have happened? And people have suggested, for example, if it was in fact an accident and there was a freak out and, you know, kids freaked out and wrapped her up in a blanket and disposed of her, why was that not investigated as a crime? When we get answers, it's more like, well, what the hell?
The exploration of what Tyra's friends could add to the timeline and how her personal relationships
including the tension of her previous romantic relationship and the atmosphere of the party she'd apparently attended the night she disappeared. Those are all key to the narrative investigation of the No Activity podcast. Another really important thing that Tanya and Maria touch on is the role that Margaret, Tanya and Tyra's mother, played in her daughter's investigation. Until her death, Margaret was the keeper of all the investigative material concerning Tyra's disappearance and homicide. And for a long time, Margaret attempted to work the case all on her own. Just a note here, the following section is based on Tanya's memory and what her mother told her. We don't have comment from the authorities who were on the case at the time.
It got very overwhelming for her. You know, a lot of these investigators, they won't welcome you in. They feel like you're hampering something. They want you to go away. They don't want you to bother them. My mom was calling them in the beginning, and they would tell her, "You're calling too much. If you don't stop, we're not going to investigate, you know, any further. You're going to just make it where we don't want to do anything." And we would go down there. My mom took me everywhere with her whenever she went down there to talk to them. They were just unreceptive of, you know, she wanted to know what was going on with the case. Was there anything new?
According to Tanya, she was able to retrieve her sister's purse from evidence, and her mother was given Tyra's jewelry straight from the coroner, right after Margaret did Tyra's identification. It was never retained in evidence. Maria discussed this during our interview.
What blows my mind about the jar of jewelry is that they didn't just give her a jar of jewelry. They gave her a jar of jewelry in cleaning solution, as if it would not later need to be evidence, as if it didn't need to be tested for anything or go to a lab.
Since the case has been reactivated, our term, by the DA, Tanya and Maria have tried to gain more information about how and why things worked the way they did in the first 3 decades of Tyra's homicide investigation. One of their main questions has been, why did the word suicide keep coming up after Tyra's death certificate was corrected?
So with the investigator at the DA's office, he has continually said that all of his reports note not suicide. He has said repeatedly that there's no note anywhere that says suicide and that he's not sure where we got that information from. Her aunt mentioned it when we were at the family reunion that officers had said to them that they think it's a suicide, that people had said to them, like police officer, law enforcement have said to them that they thought it was a suicide. But everywhere that he looks in the reports, it all says homicide, possible overdose. Homicide, likely overdose. Like, they have to note homicide because that's what's in the ME's report, but they are not looking at it like that necessarily. They're looking at it like a couple of kids did drugs and freaked out.
And you think they're basing that on context of stories from people around?
Yeah. When I spoke with the investigator, he did tell me that it's noted all over her file that it is a homicide. However, there's like an ellipsis there's like homicide with brackets that says possible overdose or likely overdose. It seems that the focus truly is this kid died by accident and her friends freaked out and dropped her down a ditch.
Tanya, do you feel like people were using the word suicide synonymously with overdose?
Yes, I do believe that. And neither one is correct. They don't have any facts. We don't have any evidence or facts to corroborate that. From the Ventura County Coroner's Office, I got the 2 reports and then her death certificate. And I got that way before I even opened the case. And then I had made another one, a request at the Ventura Police Department, because they kept saying inside all the reports that she was a runaway. And I wanted to see if there was any reports in there. And I got a phone call from them. Well, that's not the only thing that I asked for. I asked for any missing persons reports. I asked for a runaway reports. I asked for if they had the sketch of the 2 men that she was supposed to be seen with last, because I didn't know if the sheriffs would have that or the police department. I didn't know which one handles what. So I just asked for everything that I could. And then I got a phone call like a month later, and I ended up calling them back, and they said, oh, well, yeah, we got your request and everything, but our microfiche machine is broken and we're probably not going to get it fixed. So we can't fulfill, you know, look for records or anything that you need. Is there anything specific that you would like? And I'll check it out. And I said, yeah, the runaway reports and the missing persons reports, and to see if there's any sketch of the two guys. And they said, okay, we'll get back to you. And they said that they could not find in the files any runaway reports. They don't know what happened to the missing person report. And there is definitely no sketch in there, that never existed. So, and then I made another request through the district attorney's office of Ventura and asked for the same things, just more in depth, you know, see what they can come up with. And they said, nope, we don't have any of this stuff in any of our files. So they couldn't get any of it. If it still exists, I don't know.
We also have a pending request with the juvenile records. I put it in a couple months ago and I have not yet heard back. They said that it could take 90 days. So
worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole?
Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
A major focus of the work Tanya and Maria have done has involved looking to experts for advice and support. We discussed that during our conversation.
I have a couple of people that I consult with that work in law enforcement and some that work for the, well, I don't want to say what office, but they are attorneys here in Los Angeles. And I kind of go over with them the basics of the case. And one of the law enforcement, outside law enforcement that I work with, he doesn't like when I give him a lot of information. He just wants to read it himself and look it all over. So he is a 30-year veteran of violent crimes unit. He wants to remain anonymous, so I typically leave his information off. But he has consulted on 3 cases with me now. His insights are, I mean, they're crazy. They, like I said earlier, every step we get closer, it opens more questions. And it feels like every time I talk to him, there's 75 more questions at hand because he thinks about things completely differently than I ever would, which is, you know, the benefit of having experts on your side because they know what you don't. The attorneys that I consult with, often it's more along the lines of, hey, this thing happened. Can you look up if that was a law back then? Or this thing happened and they're telling us that we have no rights to this. Is that true? The experts that we consult with, at least most frequently, they are just a treasure trove of knowledge and understanding and compassion. It's really wonderful. We also try to talk as much as we possibly can with the people who are closest to the case.
Tanya, one thing that I found really interesting was that you discussed this fall that testing was finally going to be happening. And I know, especially because you've mentioned that so many things have been released. You guys have mentioned the jewelry, you've mentioned the purse, and this was September you mentioned this. What's the current status there?
They have a backlog, so they don't know how long it's going to take for that to get analyzed. So it could take years, maybe. Hopefully not. But yeah, I'm excited about that. But I wish it was more. I'm not sure what they're going to find, but hopefully I'm crossing my fingers that it's going to be something that's going to be viable.
After our interview, Maria and Tanya received word from the Sheriff's Department that the specific items that were undergoing testing are the bedspread and cord that were wrapped around Tyra's body.
You mentioned, and I have the feeling this might be Maria's expert, that an outside investigator told you that no homicide case is unsolvable. And I loved hearing that. What do you think, both of you, it will take to close Tyra's case?
A dedicated investigator, someone who's going to go through everything with a fine-tooth comb and a new perspective. You know, we want somebody who's going to actually dedicate themselves to this, to follow up on leads and do whatever it takes to get this done. I mean, it's been a long time. 37 years is a long, long time. I just want to see this go forward and find evidence that leads to either an arrest or the case being solved.
I have to echo Tanya on that I think that a dedicated and fresh set of eyes is going to be the key. But I think that the lock is someone who has known about this all along and is holding a tight lip. So with that dedicated person being the key and this other person being the lock, I think putting those two together is going to be what solves this for Tyra's family. Regardless of the outcome, regardless of the actual situation that happened, justice is well deserved. And justice may look different than what we had originally thought. But whatever it comes to, those two elements, the person who's been biting their tongue for 37 years and the eager detective that wants to solve this for Tanya and her family and for Tyra.
I asked Tanya and Maria to share some of the more surprising information they'd uncovered while working on Tyra's case.
I called Tanya one night at what was 1 o'clock in the morning, my time. So 3 o'clock in the morning, her time. Sorry about that. She did not answer until the next day. Good for her. But in my research, based off of rumors that I had heard, and that we both had heard, and something that her sister Teresa had said, that Teresa firmly believes that this was the work of a serial killer. So we looked at the rumor mill surrounding serial killers other people thought were active in the area and would have had motive and such. And, or I guess not motive, you know what I mean. But so in looking at that, I had brushed off that idea entirely. We mostly have a person in mind that we're pretty sure is responsible or at very least connected. But I came across somebody that made me stop and call Tanya at 1 o'clock in the morning. That guy just seemed really spot on. And he was in the area. And he traveled between what would cross right through Moore Park. His victims were all 30 minutes drive away from where they were picked up. They were all picked up in like active areas of town. They were all young. They all sort of had a similar look. And then when he was caught, eventually, they found a cache of hundreds of pictures of girls and women that they have yet to identify. And a lot of them resembled Tyra, and a lot of them resembled you know, this young, vivacious, beautiful women and girls.
Did you go anywhere with that lead? Like, did you ultimately decide that it was too dissimilar?
Well, I sent that information in an email over to the detective and I never heard anything back. But no, in my opinion, it's not too dissimilar. However, the other theory is stronger.
Mm-hmm. Not that you have to share your theory specifically, but do you feel pretty firmly that you have an answer to the, did Tyra accidentally cause her own death or was someone else involved in her death and not just after her death?
I think her death was purposeful.
I don't have enough information to determine whether or not I think it was an accident or it was on purpose, but I do think that all of the circumstances around it were misleading to her and were a crime, like full stop. Whether somebody set out that day to kill her or somebody set out that day to get her alone and put her in a situation that resulted in her death, either way, someone else is responsible for this. This was not Tyra's doing. That's what I think. I don't in any way think that Tyra was responsible for her own passing. And to insinuate that without evidence to back it up, or even to, in the very beginning, I mean, July 10th, an article came out that said, we're also working the idea that this was just a couple of kids who killed their friend and by accident with drugs and freaked out, you know, and it's to insinuate that over anything else. It makes it seem as though a crime was not committed. No matter what way you slice it, Tyra did not go into that night with the thought in her head that she was not going to come out of it. And she never went into that night thinking that she was surrounded by friends and that someone was going to ultimately take her life that night, whether they meant to or whether it happened after a series of unfortunate events. Like, she is in no way responsible for her own death.
Right. I agree.
I mean, what the outside expert said, he said, and what really drove it home, and even though this law didn't come into place until a year later, what really drove it home for me was the Len Bias law and what he said about that. He said, you know, a bunch of friends went out and this kid who had never so much as licked a beer bottle top did cocaine for the first time in his life and died. And now providing somebody with drugs, knowing that they could die as a result of those drugs, because every single time you go into drug use, you know that that is a possible end result. It becomes murder. It's not manslaughter, it's murder. And so knowing that just 1 year later, that law came into effect, it doesn't change the fact that that action prior to that is still, you're still causing someone else's death. It's still faultless of the person on the receiving end.
The Len Bias law that Maria just mentioned is also known as the Anti-Drug Abuse Act of 1986. Per The Guardian, it was signed into law by Ronald Reagan and spurred on by the death of a promising basketball star who died after a drug overdose, but it's been criticized in practice by its application to the war on drugs. The original intent of the law was to make supplying a person with drugs that led to their death a homicide offense. This relates to Len Bias because he'd just been drafted for the Celtics when he died of cardiac arrest due to a cocaine overdose.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. but we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
Tanya and Maria discuss their current plans for action in Tyra's case and what they need from the public.
I know you've taken a lot of action recently to gain traction and attention for Tyra's case. Can you talk to me about how successful that's been, what's been frustrating, and most importantly to us, what support do you need from our listeners?
I know that the podcast in and of itself is at least getting to the right people, because people have come out of the woodwork to offer information, to offer anything that could help big or small, which is what we ask for at the end of every episode. But also, the people in charge of her case have reached out and directly quoted things that we have said on the podcast in their responses to us. So we know that it's getting back to them, that there is pressure on them to do a good job because people are listening, even themselves included. So with the podcast itself, that's been the most powerful part, is that even the people we're talking about are listening. And that's kind of the point. We want to make the invisibility cloak smaller, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a petition out there. That's the first thing that people can do. People can read it, sign it, share it on all social medias and in all their groups, so that we can get change for Tyra's case. I have an awareness campaign that we're going to start. I want to, in the future, I want to put up some billboards and posters, you know, asking the questions, you know, what happened to Tyra, or you know, see if that will motivate people to call in to get behind what we're doing, our campaign. But yeah, we just want to spread awareness about her case, first of all, and that so that people are aware of what's been going on and how law enforcement is, because, you know, a lot of people, they will see things on TV. It's not how it really happens in real life. I mean, it's been 37 years and still we haven't got that far. And hopefully the channels of communications will open up with the new people who are taking over her case, so that we can move forward.
After our interview, Maria had a call with the sheriff and received an update that the DA investigator had not passed off the case to the sheriff's office. Rather, both offices are now looking at Tyra's case. The cold case unit is reviewing it now, and they're awaiting updates.
We are also planning a vigil and possibly a march. We're still working out the details of that, but definitely a vigil for some time over the summer in conjunction with another family that I'm working with also out of Ventura County, the family of Eric Velasquez. We wanted to put something together that would invite all the families who are going through a similar experience. The families who have loved ones who have been murdered and their cases are unsolved, families who have loved ones who have been murdered and their cases are solved, but maybe not. How do I say this? How did you put it, Tanya? You said families of people who were murdered, but the families feel like they've been forgotten.
Yeah.
So for families who have loved ones who've been murdered and feel that their loved ones are now forgotten because their case was quote unquote solved. So we want to put that together for sometime over the summer so that Tanya can come out and be in California for that. So that is one of our action items. So if you are in Southern California and you want to join for that, follow our social media so that you can keep up to date on when that is actually going to happen.
And we'll link all of that in the show notes. And I do also want to add that
I know that you may have some more targeted call campaigns and email campaigns coming, so I really want people to follow.
There is so much more to Tyra's story that we have not shared here, but you can learn all about her and her case on the No Activity podcast. Please be sure to listen and follow Tanya and Maria on social media so you can keep up with their upcoming calls to action on Tyra's case. If you have any information in the disappearance or death of Tyra Garcia, please contact the Ventura County Crime Stoppers at 805-602-8952, the Ventura County Sheriff's Major Crimes Unit at 805-383-8704, or email the No Activity Podcast. We'll have a link to that in our show notes. You can also find a link to the No Activity Podcast and to the petition Tanya mentioned. We'd love for you to listen to No Activity to hear more about Maria and Tanya's work. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. If you know of a case that should be covered on the Fall Line, there's a link to our case submission form in the show notes. Thank you for listening. The Fall Line is an independently produced show, and we appreciate listener support. It allows us to do research, obtain FOIA, pair content advisors, and support and donate to the causes we care about. If you try the products we advertise, please use our sponsor codes. It really helps. And if you'd like to support the show and the stories we cover, join us on Patreon. We're raising Patreon funds to continue to pay for the Milberg Twins billboard and to fund therapy for families who've been on the show. Each and every one of our patrons helps us continue this work, and we're so grateful for your help. On Patreon, you can get early release ad-free versions of our regular episodes for $5 a month. We also have occasional video live streams and blogs, which all patrons can enjoy starting at just a dollar. If you prefer Apple Premium, we've begun that feed as well, so you have an alternative way to contribute. The Fall Line is written, hosted, and researched by Laura Norton, with additional research by Brian Waters, Kiana Burgess, and Michaela Morrill. Interviews by Brooke Hargrove. Produced, engineered, and scored by Maura Curry. Content advisement by Brandy C. Williams, Liv Fallon, and Vic Kennedy. And, as always, our most special thanks to Angie Dodd, Liz Lipka, and Sarah Turney. As of November 2022, our monthly donations are going to Season of Justice to support their testing and family grant initiatives.